Michael Byers, what do you make of this assertion by Canadian officials that they intend to include a claim to the North Pole in these extended continental shelf claim that Canada is supposed to submit?
Well, what the Canadian officials are telling you in May 2016 is that they are implementing the policy direction given by Stephen Harper in December 2013. It was Mr. Harper who overrode the advice of Canadian government scientists and international lawyers deciding to do more mapping in the Central Arctic Ocean so as to include the North Pole in Canada's submission to the United Nations Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf. The scientists and the lawyers told Mr. Harper that Canada could not mount a successful claim to the North Pole. He chose to ignore them. He pushed for more mapping. And sadly, today, the civil servants in Ottawa are continuing with Mr. Harper's policy.
Now, what I was told by the person who is responsible for this mapping effort is that their data shows that the Lomonosov and Alpha Regis are not just regions, that they're elevations attached to the Canadian continent, and thus it makes a scientific case for Canada's claim over the North Pole. What do you say to that?
Well, they are absolutely right. The Lomonosov Ridge and the Alpha Ridge are probably submarine elevations. And what that means is that the continental shelf, in legal sense, not just a geographic sense, but the legal continental shelf, can extend more than 350 nautical miles offshore. What you might not have been told is that the Lomonosov Ridge will also be an extension of Greenland and therefore partially Danish, and that the Lomonosov Ridge is probably also an extension off of the Asian continent, which makes it at least partly Russian. And so it's not simply a question of science, it's also a question of the international law of maritime boundaries. And the reason why Canada will not be able to mount a successful claim to the North Pole is not because of the science, but because the law concerning maritime boundaries will put the North Pole well off to the Danish side. Now, what people need to understand here is that Canada and Denmark are neighbors in the Arctic because Denmark owns Greenland. And north of Greenland and Canada's Ellesmere Island, you have to have a maritime boundary. Now, the default rule in international law for such maritime boundaries is the principle of equidistance, a line that is an equal distance from the coastline on either side at every point of the line going outwards from the coastline. And if you draw such a line into the Central Arctic Ocean, the North Pole falls squarely on the Danish side. Now, to add to this point, in November 2012, the Harper government announced that it had come to a negotiated agreement with Denmark concerning the location of that boundary line out to 200 miles from shore, out to the end of the so-called exclusive economic zone. And the two countries agreed to use the equidistance principle. So, you know, the scientists can say, yes, you know, there's a scientific argument that the Canadian continental shelf includes the North Pole. Well, yes, but only if you look at the science. The moment you look at the law, it clearly becomes either Danish or Russian.
How do I put this? What's preventing Canada from moving that line further towards the North Pole after the 200 nautical miles?
the principle of consistency, that your legal positions have to be consistent. And it is inconceivable that if Canada and Denmark were to go to an international court, that the court would say that a different principle applied beyond 200 nautical miles. Look, the Canadian government knows this. The Danish government knows this. The reason that Stephen Harper insisted on more mapping was because he didn't want to be the prime minister who surrendered Canada's claim to the North Pole. It would have been politically disadvantageous to have had the opposition parties criticizing him for giving up the North Pole. And so he punted this issue down the field. He asked for more mapping. The sad thing is that the new Liberal government knows all of these details that I've explained to you, but has chosen to continue instead of being brave and basing its decisions on evidence, on what the experts are telling it, especially the international lawyers in the Department of Global Affairs. It's choosing to hide behind Mr. Harper's old policy. And this is unfortunate because the costs of mapping this area are extremely high. And this summer, for instance, Canada's largest icebreaker, the Louis S. Saint-Laurent, will be spending a month in the central Arctic Ocean and not doing its regular important tasks in Canada's Arctic archipelago, in the Northwest Passage. We have a shortage of icebreakers. To send one to the North Pole on this folly is highly inefficient and possibly damaging to other interests.
Now, what happens once this claim is submitted to the United Nations Commission on the Law of the Sea?
Well, what happens after Canada's submission is made is that in 10 or 15 years it will be considered in terms of the scientific data. In other words, we will learn whether the Lomonosov Ridge is in fact a submarine elevation and whether or not it's an elevation connected to Canada and Greenland on the one side and or Russia on the other. We will hear about the science. But the Commission is not a court. It will not determine where the maritime boundaries should be. That will have to be determined by negotiation, or if the three countries can't negotiate solutions, by perhaps being sent to an international court or tribunal. The point here, however, is that one of the other three countries involved, Russia, has actually taken a much more pragmatic approach, and having filed its complete submission last summer, in so doing, limited itself and did not claim the entire Lomonosov Ridge. It stopped just slightly past the North Pole towards the Canadian and Danish side because it knew that it didn't need to map beyond that point because the eventual result, a maritime boundary, would be negotiated to lie somewhere in the middle of the ocean, not way over on the Canadian and Danish side, but somewhere in the middle. And so Russia only mapped as far as it needed to. Canada and Denmark are not taking this reasonable, practical approach. Unfortunately, they're allowing domestic politics to cloud their decision-making.
What happens now?
Well, what happens now is that perhaps $100 million of taxpayer money is wasted this summer. An icebreaker is diverted away from more important missions, which could be damaging. The scientists and the lawyers will make a submission. It will go to the United Nations. We will get a result from the United Nations in perhaps 10, 15 years. And then there will be a long period of negotiations. And, well, the end result is that perhaps our children or grandchildren will be able to celebrate legal certainty in the Central Arctic Ocean because it will take past our own retirements before we get to a clear result.
Apart from this symbolic claim to the North Pole, are there any practical advantages to having the claim extended that far?
Well, the North Pole is not what most people imagine. It is not a place with a candy stripe pole signifying the location of Santa's workshop. It is, in fact, located in the middle of a large and hostile ocean. There are 4,000 meters of water at the North Pole. It is covered for most of the year with shifting, moving sea ice. Temperatures often drop to minus 50 degrees. It's one of the most inhospitable places on the planet, and therefore has no economic value. These submissions, these claims, only go to the issue of who has rights to the seabed, to potential resources there. And I can't imagine anyone wanting to drill for oil in 4,000 meters of water that far from any shoreline, from any port, from any population. This is all about domestic politics. It's about politicians playing on people's childhood memories of Santa Claus and his home at the North Pole. The harsh reality is the North Pole is a very dangerous, remote place, and we're wasting, as a country, hundreds of millions of dollars in trying to keep our politicians protected from criticism.